Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, it's me, Dr. C. Robert Jones, the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. It's August 4th, 2011. Beautiful Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I see my man Gunslinger in the house, Karen Hunter, and of course, Dave. Wow. I'm glad you all are here. You know, let's go ahead and kick it off with a little bit of news. Apparently, folks are running from this White House in droves. Even the press has gotten in on the act. The press has finally come around from this idol worship of Barack Hussein Obama, our president of the United States of America. Let me go ahead and clue you in on a little bit of a little exchange here that I thought to be very enlightening. White House press corps hammers Carney, the spokesman for the Obama administration. And isn't it about time? They've been stepping it up very slowly, the pressure on this spokesman over the course of the last few months. And the question was asked, what is the president doing to help the economy besides going to fundraisers? And I thought, wow, finally, somebody challenged these folks. Tapper, well, what is the president doing? We know that he went to fundraisers last night. What is he doing today? Carney, Jake, that is Tapper, chimes in. What is he doing? Carney, the president, as the president has worked, Tapper, we hear him hectoring Congress about all the stuff that needs to be done to help create jobs. Carney, that's right, and Congress, Tapper. And then he flew to Chicago. What's he doing today? Ouch. Carney responds, the president is having meetings with his senior staff. Yeah, I'm sure he is. The president has called on Congress to move quickly on things that need to have bipartisan support and are in Congress's lap. The trade, Tapper breaks in. The same stuff he was doing a couple of months ago, calling on Congress to pass things. Carney responds, Congress has the power to pass legislation that the president can sign. The actions that it can take could create more jobs right now if it passed the patent reform. I don't know how you get jobs out of passing patent reform, but I guess they believe that is something that can be done. He went on to say, if it passed the free trade agreements. And as you know, there are other issues that the president encourages and on, blah, blah, wah, 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 wah. Tapper chimes in, has he called Mitch McConnell? Has he called John Boehner? Is he working on things that they can do? Carney chimes in, Jake, I don't know. I don't. I know you weren't here yesterday. But I know you were here for most of the days before that, when the president and those leaders and others worked 7 days a week to avert a major economic crisis in this country that would have made, Tapper breaks in, you're the one always saying the president can walk and chew gum at the same time. I'm asking you. Carney responds, well, what are you asking me what he is? He is focused. This guy is the spokesman for the president. That's an actual sentence. This guy's actually speaking. I mean, come on. My dog can speak better English and string a sentence together better than Mr. Carney. Anyway, Tapper chimes in, other than calling on Congress to pass things, you've been calling on Congress to pass for months. What is he doing to help the economy? See, here's what the deal is. Folks are getting sick and tired of Barack Hussein Obama, our president, whining about what Congress should be doing, what the American people should be doing, what everybody else should be doing, while he parties like a rock star, raises millions of dollars for his campaign, flying off on Air Force One at tremendous taxpayer expense to fundraise for his campaign. He's out golfing. He's about to go on vacation again to Martha's Vineyard. And yet he's calling on everybody else to work, pretty much. Here's the thing. I'm going to go there right now. You know, this president is just plain lazy. He's both shiftless and lazy. And he's only concerned at this juncture with his reelection campaign. And, you know, it's out there now. Even the liberal media have finally finally come to their senses and are calling the president out for not doing his job. The Communist Party has endorsed Barack Obama for 2012. Wow, what else is new? Liberal pollsters, a devastating memo to Obama. Join the Tea Party. Wow. My, how things have changed. Politico, left wing, Politico is suggesting that Barack Obama, goose is cooked, that he's done. They're suggesting that Barack Obama's tenure as president can be up, or will be rather, up in just one term. Check out the Politico front page today on the web, President Obama's big drags. I'll read just a little bit of it for you. The politics of the debt fight were a drag for President Barack Obama, yanking his popularity to new lows. Here's an even bigger drag. Obama emerges from the months-long fracas weaker and facing much deeper and more durable political obstacles than his own advisors ever imagined. Not to mention, folks, that tomorrow we're expected to see, or rather hear, that the unemployment rate has gone up from 9.2 to 9.3%. That's what the prediction is today. The consensus has been that for all Barack Obama's problems, Obama has so skilled, is so skilled a politician, and that eventually the eventual GOP nominee, so flawed or hapless, that he will be reelected. Here's my prediction, folks, that Barack Hussein Obama will not be reelected so long as we put up a credible candidate. That's all we really need to do. If we can put up a credible, decent candidate, a Rick Perry, even no sound. Ouch. Let's see. That's not good. Yeah, that's not good at all. Because I'm getting a whole lot of bars here right now, and it's sounding pretty good. Okay. All right, okay. I'm going to play this brief promo, and then we're going to check on the sound issue.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains.
Not sure what the deal is with the sound. Hopefully
Why
you guys can
Rand's
hear me.
Great novel Atlas
and
Shrugged,
we're back.
Bestseller today.
Please listen to the We Are America show.
What a mess.
Home of the
sound
issues. Radio
Anybody
Network.
Hear the sound?
Every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, boy.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged?
All right.
Bestseller today.
Karen has sound. That's good. That is
it's
very
our
good.
Our real world today.
Okay.
Just like the...
All right. Nobody else has that.
Good morning. January 20th, 2017, the last day of Barack Obama's 8 years as president.
8 tough years for many as unemployment continues climbing.
With debt to China reaching record levels.
Okay, so let's go ahead and
the Chinese have overtaken the United States.
Brief break.
8 years ago, we were promised hope.
Right back. All right,
hold on. Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged, a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written. It's because our real world... Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Rourke from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it, and I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged? The corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
All right, for those of you who may not be Ayn Rand fans, check out The Fountainhead in book form, and also the movie written in out in the early 60s. And of course, one of my top five books just after the Bible, Atlas Shrugged. And now the new book that's out, which focuses on a particular character in the Ayn Rand books, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, John Galt. Those of us who produce, those of us who are the productive folks here in this great country, we are John Galt. Check it out. Check out the book. And, of course, the movie Atlas Shrugged, Part 1, will be out on DVD in September. It was in theaters for a while. Part 2 is coming out sometime next year. It's going to be great. Check it out. Now, back to what we were talking about. Excellent movie. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Finally, somebody who's seen it besides me. All right. I mean, someone my age. I mean, or close to my age. Because I know that Southern is, what, about 36, 30, 37, somewhere around there, 29. Don't buy into this whole thing that Barack Obama is invincible. This breezy certitude fails to reckon with how weak his fundamentals are a year out from the general election. Gallup pegs his approval rating at a discouraging 42%, with his standing among independents falling 9 points in just 4 weeks. His economic stats are even worse. The nation has 2.5 million fewer jobs today than the day Barack Obama took office. Now, he can blame George Bush all he wants, but 2.5 million jobs were lost on his watch. Whatever happened to the buck stops here? If that little short, annoying dude from Missouri can stand up like a man, the little artillery captain, or rather the artillery major, who failed at everything he tried except politics, you know who I'm talking about. He took over for FDR. If that little guy can put a plaque on his desk and say, "I'm in charge, the buck stops with me," why can't this little wimp of a president, this little 90-pound weakling, this chump, just simply take it upon his shoulders and say, "I'm the man, I'm in charge. Forget about what happened with the previous administration. I'm in charge now. I take full responsibility." Isn't that what a real leader does? Can we talk about it? But no, 2.5 million jobs have been lost, not saved or created, but lost during this man's presidency. And yet he will blame George Bush, and that's what's turning a whole lot of folks off. Quite frankly, I'm happy that he keeps blaming George Bush now. At first, I was saddened by it and shocked that the leader of a free world, the free world, he has the mantle, he has the title of leader. When a leader blames his predecessor or anyone else, automatically you know that he's not a leader at all. And I was appalled by it, because he's the president of the United States, and as much as I despise his policies, he's still my president. And to have my president whining and crying and blaming his predecessor for the mess he's in is, frankly, embarrassing to me. But here's the bright spot. He continues to blame George Bush, and it's turning off independents and anybody else who is not a diehard liberal. Where's the bright spot besides that? It's hard to see. Obama has few, if any, domestic achievements that enjoy broad public support. No one assumes employment, growth, or housing prices to pick up much. If at all, it's something Obama is essentially powerless to change. And the political environment and electoral map are significantly tougher than in 1928, especially in true up-for-grab states. So take heed and take heart, folks, because Barack Hussein Obama is no longer invincible or thought to be so. All we need is a credible candidate who can string a couple of sentences together without the aid of a teleprompter, and we're all good. Hopefully, the new president will be able to turn this situation around. Now, I'm not going to count Barack Hussein Obama out. He is from Chicago. He is a native of my hometown. He's got some tricks up his sleeve. There's no doubt about that. And Obama advisors acknowledge the challenges posed by the economy, but argue that voters will like his rescue of the auto industry, signing of Wall Street reform, championing of new restrictions on credit card issues, repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, investments in clean energy, and victory of insurance protection for people with pre-existing conditions? I don't think so, folks. I think that people are going to vote based on the fact that I have to go to Walmart now. And before Barack Obama became president, my yogurt was 40 cents. Now it's 66 cents. The number is hinky. The six part, the 66, it should be 65 or 69, but it's 66 cents. I think voters are going to vote like me. The gas prices have skyrocketed. Food prices have gone up. And it appears that we, not just the United States, but every country is facing a global, facing a global economic meltdown. All that stuff that Glenn Beck talked about, all that stuff about buying gold, about an economic collapse, yeah, some people laughed, say it was crazy. Conspiracy theory. It was all just a big conspiracy theory. They were laughing. Nobody's laughing anymore. Have you checked out the stock market today? Have you checked out the bad economic news? We're expecting some seriously bad economic news tomorrow about the economy and the job numbers. Job numbers were pretty bad today. 400,000 first-time unemployment filers. Not good. We're in a mess, folks. Just like we were in a mess during the Jimmy Carter presidency, but we came out of it. Why? Because we had a good president come in. My main man and yours, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Now, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to get on to the topic at hand, destroying the prestige of America. The call-in number is 347-884-8500, and you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. We'll be right back.
Please listen to the We Are America show, home of the Wahoo Radio Network, every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
I gotta tell you, with the high cost of gas and just about everything else, we're all feeling pinched.
And now I learned that Barack Obama supports a huge new tax on my guns and ammo.
And he voted to ban virtually all deer hunting ammunition.
Where is this guy from?
He's probably never been hunting a day in his life. But it's not just new taxes that Barack Obama wants. If you can believe it, he also supports a ban on the shotguns and rifles most of us use for hunting. No politician is going to take away my guns and ammo.
You don't have to be bitter to know Barack Obama isn't the kind of change we need.
On November 4th, defend freedom. Defeat Obama. Get the facts at gunbanobama.com.
Thank you for listening and continue to listen to Insane Government on the Wahoo Radio Network, weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern.
He promised to change direction. $800 billion in stimulus, trillions for government health care, 2 million jobs, gone. Left turn after left turn, America's headed the wrong way fast. 6 million foreclosures, $14 trillion in debt, $500 billion in higher taxes, and the worst long-term unemployment in generations. Don't let Obama drive us to disaster. Change direction.
Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
There are really no last campaigns. Each generation must renew and win again for itself the precious gift of liberty, the sacred heritage of freedom. With a deep awareness of the responsibility conferred by your trust, I accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States. You ain't seen nothing yet. as Americans have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I've spoken of the Shining City all my political life, but I don't know if I ever quite communicated what I saw when I said it. But in my mind, it was a tall, proud city built on rocks stronger than oceans, windswept, God-blessed, and teeming with people of all kinds, living in harmony and peace.
I accept your nomination for president.
Bush, do solemnly swear.
Communism died this year. By the grace of God, America won the Cold War. As Commander-in-Chief, I can report to you our armed forces fought with honor and valor.
My fellow citizens, I proudly accept your nomination.
I've got a vision for America that is hopeful and optimistic and inclusive.
And tonight, my fellow Americans, I ask you to stand with me.
Now, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
I believe in the energy and innovative spirit, so we unleash that energy with the largest tax relief in a generation. Freedom and fear are at war. Our nation, this generation, will lift a dark threat of violence from our people and our future. We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
America in this young century proclaims liberty throughout all the world and to all the inhabitants thereof. Renewed in our strength, tested but not weary, we are ready for the greatest achievements in the history of freedom.
Wow, that just gets me. Right here, every single time. All right, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. I'm glad to see everybody here. Last night I didn't get a chance to thank everybody for taking time out of your precious evenings to come into my show and listen and participate and just listen, or not to listen but to participate, or listen and participate all at once, or even if you're doing the dishes or, you know, smooching with your significant other or whatever you might be doing, you're here, and I do appreciate it, because there's so many other things that you could be doing rather than listening to the sound of my horrid voice. Because much like Henry Fonda and Tom Selleck, I don't really like the sound of my own voice. They've stated that they didn't like the sound of theirs, and I concur. I really don't like the sound of my own voice as much as other people may like theirs. So I empathize with Tom and Henry, wherever he is, when they said that, when I heard that they'd said that. Dave, would you please stop it? You're causing me to blush here. I do appreciate everybody being here. Now, on with the program. Enough of the kisses and hugs. In due course, the what I like to call the post-American president turned against his own people. And what I mean by that, it seems increasingly unlikely that he ever really considered us his people. Those who had dedicated their lives, those of us who have dedicated our lives to protecting this nation before and after the September 11 terror attacks, Obama announced his intention to close down the Guantanamo Bay detention camp during his presidential campaign. And he reiterated this goal many times after becoming president, despite the embarrassing fact that many former Gitmo detainees returned to jihad after being released from the camp. Obama accepted at face value that the leftist claim that Guantanamo Bay was a torture camp. And even as late as his December 1, 2009 speech, announcing his troop escalation in Afghanistan, he reiterated this, and I quote, "And finally, we must draw on the strength of our values, for the challenges that we face may have changed, but the things that we believe in must not. And that's why we must promote our values by living them at home, which is why I have prohibited torture and will close the prison at Guantanamo Bay." End quote. He goes on to say, "And we must make it clear to every man, woman, and child around the world who lives under the dark cloud of tyranny that America will speak out on behalf of their human rights and tend to the light of freedom and justice and opportunity and respect for the dignity of all people. That is who we are. That is the source, the moral source of America's authority." Well, that's all very sweet. It's all flowery. And of course, he was reading from a teleprompter when he said it. But Obama's pledge to speak out on behalf of human rights everywhere rang hollow almost immediately. It was bitterly ironic that just over a week later, the Cairo Institute for Human Rights Studies found in a survey of 12 Arab countries, Algeria, Bahrain, Egypt, Iraq, Lebanon, Monaco, Palestine, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Syria, Tunisia, and Yemen, that the human rights situation in virtually all of them had deteriorated markedly in the preceding year. Arab governments remained wedded to a broad array of repressive laws that undermine basic liberties. As said the report, it accused the Obama administration of abetting the repression. Most policies toward these nations, it said, were wholly inadequate to reform and human rights in the region. Obama had abandoned reform initiatives. The last spark of life in the initiatives was quashed once and for all with the arrival of a new administration. So why was Obama mum? Why was he quiet about the deteriorating human rights situation in these Muslim countries? Muslim countries, folks. Well, did he harbor hopes that he would be able to induce them to change by heaping praise and concessions upon them? Whining, bowing, scraping? Maybe. Or was he simply indifferent to the human rights situation in those nations? For while the alleged torture at Gitmo served his political purposes, in numerous ways, human rights abuses in Syria or Yemen could not either do him damage or afford any significant political gain. So, to my mind, Obama tried to maximize public outrage over the torture at Guantanamo in April 2009. The Obama administration announced that it intended to release a series of photos that supposedly depicted this torture. This would, of course, have handed America's enemies a huge, huge propaganda opportunity and erode the nation's moral authority to act in the world, perhaps for generations to come. But the ensuing public outcry was so great that ultimately the post-American president, Barack Hussein Obama, chose his battles quietly and let the issue drop. Nevertheless, the damage had been done. The president of the United States was spreading the notion that American officials had engaged in torture at Guantanamo Bay, even without actually releasing the photos. He had provided ample grist for the Islamic jihadist propaganda mills. Why did Obama indulge moral outrage over the alleged torture at Gitmo? Why? Because the Obama administration is an apologist for all the perceived bad deeds of the United States of America, all the perceived history of slavery and wars and rumors of wars. Obama went around shortly after this and apologized to America's enemies. And on August 24, 2009, Attorney General Eric Holder appointed John Durham as a federal prosecutor to investigate CIA officers who might have abused suspected terrorists. With a fine grasp of understatement, Holder conceded, and I quote, "I fully realize that my decision to commence this preliminary review will be controversial," end quote. That wasn't going to stop him. No, my brother. As Attorney General, my duty is to examine the facts and follow the law. In this case, given all the information currently available, it is clear to me that this review is the only responsible course of action for me to take. Why? Why, folks? Why was it necessary for the Attorney General of the United States, given all the crimes being committed here in the United States, all the... Obviously, he must have had a full desk. Can you imagine the Attorney General of the United States having nothing else better to do with his time other than to harass and harangue CIA officers? They'd have to get lawyers. They'd have to lawyer up. He'd have to take lawyers and researchers from a variety of tasks in order to give the CIA a black eye and prove to the world that we are a just nation. We have callers on the line. Caller, you on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. Is that you, Craig? Yeah, Craig probably had to take
it. Oh, yes. I was just...
Craig, we're having some phone issues,
yeah,
man.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. But the phone is breaking up a little.
All right. It's fine. Anyway.
All right. Now Craig is going to go ahead and fix that stuttering problem his phone has, and then he'll probably be back in a minute. Beach Bomb, are you still feeling bad? I'm sorry to hear that. Beach Bomb has been out of sorts for a while. He hasn't been feeling well. She. I don't know if Beach Bomb is a he or a she, honestly. May I ask a question? I'm going to ask a question right here and now. What is it about liberals that urged them to want to apologize so much for the United States of America being the United States of America? Why do liberals feel the need to apologize for this country I don't understand it. I never have understood it. But here we go. The Obama administration seeking to persecute CIA agents, to apologize, to close Gitmo. And even going after Navy SEALs. The post-American president, Barack Hussein Obama, in November 2009, wanted to prosecute three Navy SEALs because they captured Ahmed Hassim Abed, the mastermind of the killing and horrible mutilation of Americans in Fallujah, Iraq, in 2004. But instead of being hailed as heroes, which they would have been under a Bush administration, maybe even a Clinton administration, and certainly under a Reagan administration, they faced court-martial because Abed emerged, according to Rowan Scarborough of Fox News, with a bloody lip. Are you kidding me? A SEAL allegedly punches a mastermind of murder and brutal torture. And this administration seeks to court-martial them? Let me express my outrage here. And I know we don't have Ronald Reagan anymore. And I know we don't have George Bush anymore. And I know we don't even have Bill Clinton anymore. Because even under Clinton, if the idea to court-martial Navy SEALs, men who have sacrificed so much just to become Navy SEALs, and then to put their lives on the line, had been hauled before a court-martial board because they punched a murderer and a terrorist in the face, whichever moron had thought to bring those charges would be gone. Would be gone. He would be so gone that he wouldn't even exist anymore. He wouldn't even be able to get a job as a greeter in Walmart. But in this administration, wow. Oh, no, you can't go around punching a mass murderer, proven mass murderer. You got to treat him nice and sweet because our prestige is at stake here. We have to worry about what people think. And if you're a Navy SEAL and you go around punching folks, whether they deserve it or not, then we got to haul you before a court-martial board. Never mind all those months of torture that you endured to become a Navy SEAL, all the training, all the millions of dollars spent on taking a raw recruit and turning him into a lethal American asset, a warrior, a hero. Never mind all that. You punched a murdering terrorist bastard. And now we got to court-martial you. So the whole world, so we'll send a message to the world that we won't tolerate you giving up, any American giving a terrorist a bloody lip. This pisses me off. A high-placed military source said that the SEALs were so angry about these court-martial proceedings, they were talking about not taking any more prisoners. And who could blame them? So the internationalist Obama managed in one fell swoop not only to demoralize the SEALs, but to make America that much less safe. Damn. Even worse, the military source said that the prosecution of the SEALs was a cause dear to the White House. Did you hear what I just said? The military source, the leak, said that the prosecution of the Navy SEALs was a cause dear to the White House. which pursued it relentlessly as payback for an earlier action taken by the SEALs, killing the Somali jihadist pirate who held hostage Captain Richard Phillips of the Alabama in April 2009. Obama, ever the internationalist, not the American president, but the internationalist, had set the rules of engagement in such a way as to preclude killing the pirates. A shot could be fired only if Phillips seemed to be in imminent danger of death. Now, the SEALs were on site for 38 hours and had several chances to take out the pirates, but were held back. Finally, the on-site commander determined that Phillips was indeed in danger of death and ordered the SEALs to fire. According to a retired military intelligence officer, who shall remain nameless, who called in to Rush Limbaugh, my main man, with the information, Obama was privately furious, although publicly he claimed that he ordered the shot in order to gain public support. But he did not forget the incident, and the prosecution of the SEALs was payback. It was payback time. When does the President of the United States of America prosecute Navy SEALs for punching a guy in the face? When does the President of the United States become so vindictive, so petty, and so childish that he prosecutes military personnel for doing their job, what they were trained to do? When does this ever happen? When has it ever happened in the history of this country? Who is it that is saying that this guy is such a great president, that he's doing a fine job? Who says that? There was no way to verify the information given to my man Rush, but there was also no doubt that it was plausible, particularly given Obama's other actions and habits of mind. And as we have seen numerous times, and in August, in particular, 2009, Secretary of State Clinton said that it was a matter of great regret, quote, great regret, end quote, that the United States did not accept the authority of the International Criminal Court, which dearly wanted to try American soldiers for war crimes. Did you hear me? I'm going to say it one more time. In August 2009, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, said that it was a matter of, and I quote, great regret that the United States did not accept the authority of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, which dearly wanted to try American soldiers for war crimes. It could still happen, folks. It could still happen. But Obama seemed preoccupied and angry about the treatment of jihadi terrorists and was going after those who put protecting Americans first. The hypocrisy of this administration is devastating. Devastating. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. The economy bites President Obama hard. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. It is now beyond a reasonable doubt that the president's economic policies are not working. Since Mr. Obama took office in January 2009, 2.5 million jobs have been lost in the private sector in the USA. Right now, 25% of all Americans holding mortgages are in trouble, not able to pay their debts or losing value on their homes. What Mr. Obama tried on the economy has not worked. The folks know that. Every poll shows the president getting unfavorable opinions on economic matters. But there is much more in play than Mr. Obama's political future. This country is in dire trouble, and that is not an exaggeration. The gross domestic product is the total amount of all the goods and services the USA puts out every year. Right now, federal spending is 24% of the GDP. 24%, a quarter of what we put out, federal spending. And if you continue to spend at this rate, the amount of debt America is going to hold will pass the entire GDP in 10 years. That means we're entering bankruptcy and default territory. Right now, the USA owes $14.4 trillion, and another $1.4 trillion will be added this year. So it is clear that not only is unemployment high, not only is housing a disaster, but the federal government continues to spend at a rate that is catastrophic. So why is this happening? Well, it all boils down to political philosophy. President Obama is a liberal guy who believes the Fed should run the economic show, and he hired advisors who believe that as well. The administration then set out to fight the recession by spending government money, the so-called stimulus, and that ran up trillions of dollars of debt. Historically, the way out of recessions is to give the private sector lower tax rates and reward people, businesses, for hiring other people. But the Obama administration has resisted that. So what the upcoming election comes down to is whether the American people understand the economic present and future. At this point in history, the USA needs a robust private marketplace, and it's got to drastically cut government spending. Drastically. And that's a memo. Now for the...
Who doesn't agree that we really need to change course here? That this administration has tried these outlandish socialist policies, and they haven't worked so far. They haven't worked at all. Now, if our current president is so brilliant and so wonderful and such a genius, shouldn't he be able to see that what he's doing is not helping? It's not working? Wow. I don't know. Let me get my man Craig on here. Maybe the stuttering issue of his phone is cleared up. Craig, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. You there?
Yeah.
Okay. Still not cleared up. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's over here. I don't know. All right. Craig is still having some issues, or I guess they could be my issues. So let's move along, shall we? Freedom of speech. Freedom of speech in the age of jihad. If you've noted the news lately, you've noticed that words like terrorist and hostage have been bandied about in reference to Republicans. Terrorist activity, hostage, bombs, blowing up, held hostage, hostage taking, terrorism. No, they're not talking about Muslim extremists. They're talking about Republicans, the GOP, the Tea Party. Now, when a Muslim soldier kills many soldiers on an army base, well, he's thought to be a lone gunman, a nut. The word terrorism doesn't come into play by anybody. He's not a terrorist. He's just an extremist. All alone, all by himself. They don't use the word terrorist for real terrorist, but they'll throw down the word terrorist for the Tea Party. Or anybody who doesn't agree with them. we're now terrorists. Does anybody find that there's an irony there? Because soon after Barack Obama became president, he went to war, but not against global jihad or the rogue state of North Korea or any other enemy of the nation. He's sworn to protect. Instead, Barack Obama went to war against, yeah, you guessed it, the freedom of speech. The most basic, fundamental, unalienable right of every individual who lives and breathes the air of America's exceptionalism and rule of law. America is the most magnificent experiment in human history, folks. We are. Cougar 11's in the house. My good friend is back, finally. Cool Mike, thank you for stopping in. We are the most magnificent, the greatest experiment in human history. A novel, a moral form of governance that stands on the rights of the individual, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to dissent. There was not before, and not since, a country built so completely upon capitalism, the most benevolent human system in the world, in which the individual was protected by the rule of law against both mob rule, majority rule, and minority plotting special interests. The United States of America boasted the first government founded on the rights of the smallest minority in the world, the individual. The individual. The Bill of Rights reads, "Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press." Folks, it's our foremost safeguard against tyranny. It is. The most basic tenet of our great and noble nation is freedom of speech. Indeed, it is the cement. It's the cement. It's the glue that holds together the bricks of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There is no responsibility of a constitutional republic without... Look, let me just put it this way. There is no possibility, none, of a constitutional republic without freedom of speech. If one group is allowed to suppress the speech of another, the suppressing group has achieved tyranny. And more to the point, in the words of Ayn Rand, the principles of free speech, and I quote, is not concerned with the content of a man's speech and does not protect only the expression of good ideas, but all ideas. If it were otherwise, who would determine which ideas are good and which to be forbidden? The government? End quote. Yes, the government. Because in August 2009, just as the national debate over health care was ramping up, then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said this in a USA Today op-ed about those who were protesting against the plan. Here's the quote. "Drowning out opposing views is simple, un-American. Drowning out the facts is how we failed at this task for decades." End quote. But who was really trying to drown out the opposition? Let's examine that. 3 days before Pelosi and Hoyer branded opponents of Obama's health care plan as, quote, un-American. If you were an opponent of Obama's health care plan, you were considered to be un-American. Unappreciative. Obama spoke at a campaign rally for Virginia gubernatorial hopeful Craig Deeds. Speaking also of the opponents of his health care plan, Obama declared, and I quote, "I don't want the folks who created the mess to do a lot of talking." Really? That's what he said. He went on to say, "I want them to get out of the way so we can clean up the mess." He went on to say, "I don't mind cleaning up after them, but don't do a lot of talking." Am I wrong, Virginia? Yeah, Barack Obama was wrong. Talking, dissent, debate, and loyal political opposition is at the very heart, the lifeblood of American Republic, of this republic. Freedom of speech not only protects popular ideas, it protects all ideas. If Pelosi, Hoyer, and Obama succeeded in silencing dissent to the Democrats' health care proposals, the life of that republic would be effectively over. The hatred of the good for being the good. The hatred of the good for being the good. But surely, but you know what? Should we give him the benefit of the doubt? Maybe he was just running off at the mouth. He didn't really understand what he was saying. Could that be the case? He didn't intend to demonize and silence dissent, did he? Did they? Well, hell yeah, they did. It started even before Barack Obama became president. For example, columnist Michael Barron noticed it in October 2008 after recounting how Obama told a Nevada crowd to, and I quote, "talk to your friends and talk to your neighbors," end quote, "and to argue with them and get in their face," end quote. Why is the president of the United States telling anybody to get into my face? Obama's not going to get punched in the face for getting in my face. The person who's getting in my face is going to get punched for getting in my face. But I guess Obama didn't care about that. Talk to your friends and talk to your neighbors and to argue with them and get in their face. What a moron. Barron noted that actually Obama supporters are doing a lot more than getting into people's face. They seem to be determined to shut people up. And I experience it all myself. I experience it every day. Folks want me to shut up. They don't want to hear what I have to say. I've had people come on this show, listen to my show, black folks. They listen to the show. They say, "Hey, I'm going to listen in on your show tonight." After the show's over, I never hear from these folks again. They don't even take my calls. Of course, I only call once. If I don't get a response, then I know what the deal is. I've had people who have been friends with me for 20 years who resort to name calling, even to talk about my mama, over Barack Hussein Obama. Over the fact that I do not support the policies of this president. I've had people get in my face. Even though they know my history as a Marine and a warrior. Because I tell you what, I'm not one of those service people who go home, who work in supply, or who work in, you know, aviation maintenance or in administration. Go home and lie to the folks and say I jump out of airplanes and I swim in the ocean and I And I've been fighting all kinds of battles and stuff. I'm not one of those people. No, those people go home and lie about the things that I actually did. I did things that the other folks went home and lied about. So to get in my face is no easy task, and they've done that. Over what? Barack Hussein Obama. Barack Hussein Obama. I've had friends who have been my friends for 20 years cease to converse with me, call me names. I tell you what.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I tell you what. Sell out. I don't know my history. I'm one of the crabs in the barrel. The favorite is, I hate myself. I hate my black race. I hate being black. I'm not really black. I'm no black man. I'm not black enough. The last person told me that I don't know my history. They want to shut us up. According to them, if you're a black and you're a Republican, you're a conservative, then you're a sellout. And this is what Barack Obama's talking about. He's talking about getting in folks' face and convincing them. Don't let people talk. Because you know what? When we communicate, we exchange ideas. Communication is important, but Barack Obama doesn't want communication. Earlier today, or rather last night, he said to a group of his supporters, don't get caught up in the details of what's going on. Simply go out and tell people the good things we're doing. Don't get caught up in the details of unemployment and the unemployment rate and all of that. He actually said these things. Don't talk about the details. Just speak in general terms. He's telling his supporters to go out and get into people's faces. Don't offer details, because there aren't any. But to get in people's faces and tell them all the good things that he's doing. But in general terms. I mean, really. Now, Barron recalled that when Obama's opponent, Stanley Kurtz, a writer for the Conservative National Review, who had been exploring ties between Obama and 60s terrorist William Ayers, appeared on a radio host Milt Rosenberg's show in Chicago. Obama fans jammed WGN's phone lines and sent in hundreds of protest emails. The message was clear to anyone who would follow Rosenberg's example. We will make trouble for you if you let anyone make the case against the one. And I've heard it. I've heard it all. Make the case against Barack Obama and you're a racist. Make the case against Barack Obama's policies and you're a racist. If you don't like the man's policies, you're a racist. If you're black, then you're a sellout. This is how they attempt to shut us up. This is how they get around the whole freedom of speech thing. It's almost ingenious. That same month, the governor of Missouri, Matt Blunt, issued a statement on the Obama campaign's abusive use of Missouri law enforcement. Blunt charged that three Missouri state officials, St. Louis County Circuit Attorney Bob McCullough, St. Louis City Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce, and Jefferson County Sheriff Glenn Boyer, along with the leader of Obama's campaign in Missouri, Senator Claire McCaskill, had, quote, attached the stench of police state tactics to the Obama-Biden campaign. They had announced the formation of a, quote, truth squad, end quote, in Missouri that would track down people who stated publicly that they considered what they considered to be falsehoods about Obama and would initiate proceedings against them for slander or libel, thus suggesting that if you had anything bad to say about Obama or his policies, that they would make trouble for you. They will make trouble for you if you speak out against Obama. And I guess my so-called liberal friends have decided that if I don't agree with Obama or his policies, then I'm a sellout, and they're no longer going to associate with me. Well, I'm thinning out the herd, and I'm glad to do it, because I'll tell you what, a lot of these folks, they were going to be gone anyway, because I tell you what, here's what I do. Just after New Year's, I go through my book, and I clean house, and I eliminate the dead wood. I get rid of people. They don't ever hear from me again, and a great many of these people are on my list for this coming year, and they've just eliminated themselves and saved me the trouble. Freedom of speech is important, folks, and when the Obama administration uses tactics such as these in order to keep us quiet, we've got some serious problems. I'll bring my man Craig in here. Craig, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
How we doing, Doc?
Well, indeed, and you sound great now.
Yeah, I think I got the issues fixed. We've been dealing with it all night. We had to cancel Victor's show tonight, insane government. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there's been a whole lot of issues going on. So. But,
hey, you know what I did? I got one of those clear devices, one of those clear things you plug into your USB port that gives you internet access over the air, because I was having similar issues, and I decided I was going to have a secondary, a backup.
Oh, you got a card from your internet or your wireless provider?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I might have to look at one of those because I've had some issues today, and Victor had a lot of issues. So definitely not good to do an internet talk show without internet, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I know Annie's been having some problems too.
Yeah. Yep. So I'll give a shout out to ABC. It's probably the cabal conspiring against us. So
no doubt to stifle our freedom of speech.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, but ABC posted an article, and I know you did the show on the Jewish dynamic, and I didn't know if you referenced that or not last night.
I did not.
Okay. I know you dug deep into the issues there, so I didn't know if you utilized that particular article or not. So it's a pretty good article. I was reading it after he posted it. So, but future content for you.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Last night we talked a lot about Barack Obama's anti-Jewish sentiment and how his. He's managed to hide it very well, and I think it's a situation very similar to President Kennedy, how the press pretty much stifled and hid President Kennedy's foibles when he was running around with all the ladies, and the press knew exactly what was going on, but they liked him, they liked the president, and they thought he was doing some good things, so they kind of hid that. They protected him for a long time, and only years later did all this stuff come out about his use of prescription drugs and all the women he had coming in and out of the White House. And I suspect that after Barack Obama ceases to be a factor on the political scene, a lot of things are going to come out about the type of man not the type of president, but the type of man he is. And a lot of the things that should have been revealed will before the campaign and during his presidency will be revealed, and a lot of folks are going to be shocked by it. And maybe some folks won't be.
Well, I think that people like you and I and individuals who are active purveyors of news and don't just people that actually digest what they're seeing and utilize their brain power aren't going to be very surprised, because there is so much that came out during the campaign that it's amazing. You know, nobody else could have had the, if you're just talking about the personal connections to individuals, it's amazing that he came through that and people still supported him because his views and his people that he's chose to work with, it's amazing that you could escape that. So, it's not going to be any big surprise to a lot of people, I think. So, because we already understand the type of man that he is. If you actually digest the information that you're given, because we've had plenty of information about him. So, you know, and Kennedy in 2011, if he was president, a millennium president, a majority of that wouldn't have a lot of those things that he did in his on the private side would not have been as secret as they were. So,
well, yeah, I agree. The president continues to throw out little hints about what type of man he is, his ideology, how he thinks, and I think the mainstream media is just about they're dipping their toe in the water. In an attempt to be objective, finally, after almost 3 years of the president of this man being in office, they're finally starting to challenge him just a little bit, and I'm enjoying it. But they haven't really put his feet to the fire, and I'm not sure if it had something to do, honestly, with his race by the fact that he is the first so-called African-American president,
mm-hmm.
or if they want to be viewed as being overly harsh or racist or whatever. What do you think?
I think that if a viable – did I lose you? Did I lose you? Yeah,
Hold on, Craig. We have another caller on 616. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
Hey, it's cool, Mike.
Mike, is that you?
Okay. Yeah, it certainly is, dude. I have to school you and Craig on this. Barack Obama's not African American. He's Irish. He said it himself when he was in Ireland. He said he was Irish.
He was Puerto Rican when he visited Puerto Rico too.
Barack Obama's a chameleon, so.
He reminds me of my state rep, who 8 houses on our street all thought he went to their church. and it's true. They're all like, "Oh, he goes to our church." I'm like, "Wait a minute, he got married in my church." And they're like, "No, he came to my house, told me he knew me from church. He gave me a big hug." And I'm like, "But here's the bottom line: don't go by what people say. Go by their voting record. Let the voting record speak for itself." And I'll tell you, Doc, your pictures today up for your description are perfect. He's destroying this country one bill at a time. They've started the big lawsuit yesterday with the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. And on top of all this, this agreement that supposedly, they reached across the aisle and all this bull crap that makes me sick. 608 new rules, regulations, and amendments.
Yeah.
All the problems we got in the country, we got 600 new ones, as if we need more laws.
What I find amazing, gentlemen, is how much, I know people are probably getting tired of hearing this, But I mean, it's just the parallels are just so similar between Ayn Rand's novel, Atlas Shrugged, and what is going on with this administration. It's as if this administration is following that novel, a page for page, chapter for chapter. Now, for those of you who don't know what Ayn Rand's book is all about, it's about the government overtaxing and overregulating big businesses, such to the extent that big businesses, even small businesses, decide that they are going to shut down, go on strike, and cease to produce. And in so doing, the economy stops, comes to a standstill. Indeed, not only the United States economy, but the world economy comes to a complete halt because the producers, the wealth creators, have simply decided that they'd had enough and they're going to stop producing. Do you gentlemen see that happening here? Because I do.
Absolutely.
It's been happening.
Yeah.
I mean, this takeover didn't just start with. It's been happening over the past, say, 8 to 10 years. And, I mean, they continue, as I said, mentioned, this bill that saved the government or whatever in the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what these 600 new laws and regulations are? There's not a lot they can do to we the people anymore because we're already almost in the socialist area. So it's all against business.
Yeah.
Regulating the little mom-and-pop shops, and now they have to buy this kind of broom. They already tell them what kind of light bulbs and toilets to have. So and this is exactly what happened, that we know even in this health care bill, McDonald's is exempt, and they just exempted another big company, not like Walmart, but another really big company. So the bottom line, Doc, is you're right. It's grandma and grandpa's shop that's going to have to close. And they're crippling our own country. I mean, we're imploding from within. Due to the people we elect within.
Right. And, you know, but this has happened at all levels. You know, and Walmart, I support Walmart in and of itself, but I don't support Walmart here. You know, they've done their job. But time and time again, Walmart has went in and destroyed the mom and pop shops with the leadership of towns and counties. Welcoming Walmart and laying the red carpet for them because for some reason they thought it would be good to bring in Walmart and destroy the shops within their towns and cities. I mean, it happened here where I live. It's happening all over the place. So it's not just at the federal level either. We've abandoned production at a federal level and we've had city and local governments destroy cities. You know, California, there's all types of examples out there of, you know, city administrators having seven-figure salaries. There was just a city south of San Diego, city the size of, I don't know, Flint, Michigan, with a police chief that his entire package compensated him over $500,000 as a police chief.
Wow.
You know, so it's not just the federal level, and a lot of this correction needs to come from the state and local levels. That's why I am so excited that it looks as if this balanced budget amendment is going to get sent to the states. And just getting the states involved, I think I'm hoping that it will continue to spur the states. You know, Obamacare ignited a lot of state legislators to fight back against the federal government, and hopefully it's supposed to be come to the floor and supposed to be passed before the end of the year due to that deal. So once you get that balanced budget amendment sent to the states, hopefully that will reignite what started with Obamacare and getting our state legislators to really assert the powers that they have via the Constitution.
Indeed. Gentlemen, we are done for the night. We have 34 seconds left. I want to thank everybody for being here. Once again, the show just simply did not go on long enough. Thank you all for being here. Thank everybody for being in the chat room. Thanks for calling in. My main man, Cool Mike, Craig, Beach Bum, Tesler, Billy, everybody, thank you so much for being here. Karen, Gunslinger, Mrs. Jones, Richard, Southern, Wahoo Radio, thank you. I love you guys. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for taking the time. Good night.
Lemon drops high above the chimney top, that's where